get working on this stuff straight away, but like organize that first point of first call with them and get this sense that you're really pumped about stepping forward and working with them. What it does is it makes them feel good that they're in safe hands and you've got process behind looking after them.
Welcome to the Marketing Study Lab podcast with me, Peter Sumpton, the Lego master of marketing and marketing consultant, providing you with the building blocks you need to be a successful marketer. This intro lasts about 1 minute, so feel free to skip forward if you've heard all this before. I seriously won't be offended. If you're new to the show, we chat to amazing people to give you practical advice you can implement right now that will make you and your marketing truly awesome. The conversations we have will lead you to the actionable marketing knowledge you've been craving, and now you've found it, so you can relax and enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks to all those that have left a 5-star Apple Podcast review. It's the best way to support what I'm trying to do here. If you have a burning marketing question, you can catch me on LinkedIn. I know I'm supposed to say the links are in the show notes, but let's face it, you've got better things to do than try and find those pesky show notes right now. Enough of the show intro. Let's get on with introducing our guest. Just a quick reminder that this is part two of a two-part chat with Richard Moore and how to master the sales process. If you haven't already, check out the first episode from last week on any good podcast provider. Just look up Marketing Study Lab or subscribe to the channel right now. And then you might have to download the previous episode, and I'm getting into the detail. Let's move on. Last week, we ended up by talking about how using video is a much better way of communicating than using the standard telephone. They still exist, I've been told. Now, let's get back to Richard and all things sales. The next part that I want to cover is probably the hardest part or the easiest part to go, oh, okay, that didn't work then. And that's the dealing with objections. It's so easy to, you get an objection like, okay, well, that's fine. See you later. How is the best way to deal with objections? And at some point it's clear that it isn't for them or it isn't for you, but how's the best way to deal with objections that might be thrown at you?
Firstly, it depends where in the process it is. Okay. Because if you have an objection at the very start, what's known as a knee-jerk objection, because there are two main types. The knee-jerk objection is representation of not being interested in you. Knee-jerk objection would be like, oh, just send me an email, or I don't have time, I'm not interested, or whatever. You could be Richard Branson, like, and if you get it wrong, and like, just not interested. It's so important still to recognize that you are getting some really good feedback. And whenever I hear people say, you know, oh, I've had a terrible day, I've had, like, everyone's hanging up on me, there's no conspiracy where all these leads got together and said, let's just hang up on this person. What's happened is you're getting feedback. If you're the constant on all of these phone calls, for instance, what's standing out is that something you're doing or putting out there represents a particular type of interaction that historically they're found to be a waste of time. Mm. So basically you are telegraphing that you are like a set of people that typically they have conditioned themselves to believe aren't going to be of use. So great feedback. So you've got to record yourself. You know, what am I saying? I remember when I first started selling, I was like, I listened to myself the first time. I was like, I sound like a game show host. And so like, why? Of course no one wants to listen because I sound too cheesy. And you know, and when you sound like you're just reading a script or something like that, you've got to get away from that because people don't trust the unknown, especially they don't know, because they feel they've got an agenda. People are fine with being sold to by people they want to be sold by. So you need to make sure that you have a bit more of a human touch, if you like. The other type of objection, which is a bit more robust, if you like, is a real one, which doesn't represent them not being interested. It actually represents a level of interest, but there's an issue. And the reason why it represents a level of interest is because they're willing to actually say what the problem is usually. Hmm. And often you get this through the process of pitching or sharing the value proposition all the way through to the end. And in fact, when you go back, sometimes if you're going to follow up with them, if that's your process, you may well find that they have an issue there. And the reason why they're sharing it is because they're kind of there, but they're not hanging up on you or not ignoring or ghosting you. They're willing to give you a bit of feedback, which represents there was an element of interest to a degree. So how do you handle them? Well, the question is, firstly, how bad is your objection? Are you completely off point? Like, are they completely irrelevant to you? In which case you deserve it because you're trying to sell someone who's not right. But on the basis that on paper they should be a really good fit, you know, the money's right and that kind of thing, often it's not actually the product. And often it's not even your process. Often it's just the connection with you. Mm. So there was some science done on this a while back, and this really is important to understand about objections, but also about pitching and selling in general. It was said that something in the region of 10%, I think it was like 8% of the reason why anyone buys anything is the actual product. So for instance, if I'm buying an iPhone, it's the particular chip and the frequency at which it runs at, and the amount of RAM and the size of the screen. About 30% is the actual process used to close you, but most of the rest of it, so like 60-odd%, is the connection. So like how much they trust you, how much they want to buy from you. If someone comes up to you in a car park and says, do you want to buy this phone? You're like, no. Whereas if precisely the same person suddenly is surrounded by an Apple store, which is designed to make you fall in love with everything beautiful there, then what happens is you feel different because you've conditioned yourself. This is the place you trust. So usually an objection, if it doesn't feel that there's anything obvious, it's, and they're being giving you like a soft no, like, oh, it's just not quite the right time or a right fit. They're often like just not vibing with you enough. And it kind of sucks, but sometimes it's down to that. But the other things could be quite nuanced. It could be, you know, that it's just that you've got the wrong person is a really big problem for a lot of corporate salespeople. They will rather pitch the person who will listen than the person who decides. Because it's easier.
Yes,
that someone who's a non-decision maker, right? And if you go, my job, I was like told off when I first started work. If I didn't pitch a managing director or a CEO or a president, it's like, that's all you're pitching. That's the end of it. And you have to do it four times a day. So if you're like, oh, I'll just pitch a marketing manager today because that'll be easier. Like, obviously, they're keen, but they never get a deal. So if you do, it takes a long time. So handling objections, it's about asking the right questions and letting them talk. The biggest mistake people, like those who have had terrible or no training, is you got a problem, therefore let's try a discount. And it doesn't work. Because what happens is if there's nothing about your product to differentiate it between, you know, any others, then people don't see a reason why they should choose you over something else. So giving them a big discount may provide a differentiator, but you're taking a lot of the value, the perception of value out of what you're doing. Price should be very much the last thing you ever touch. Typically, the problem they have is not the money. Almost never is it the money. And you cannot fix problems with making a discount. If it's not a good fit, it's not a good fit. Mm. If someone says to me, do you want to go and watch, you know, Everton play, I don't know if you're an Everton fan, then the answer is no. And it's like, but what about if the tickets were cheaper? The answer's still no.
Yeah.
It doesn't change the reason. So what you end up doing is killing yourself because it doesn't really make a difference. So the process should be simple. It should be listen, acknowledge that there's an objection in the first place, don't ignore it. So after acknowledging it, then you ask a few questions. Like you say, so, you know, what do you feel the issue is? And understand it from their point of view. Because the truth is, from their perspective, the objection is right. Mm-hmm. Based on the level of information they know, it's right. And you may not agree with them, but currently with what you've given them, they feel that way. So what we need to do is, after we've asked a little bit why, we need to then do what we need to do to handle it. So don't prove them wrong, because no one wants to be proven wrong. You may win a battle, but you lose the war in the end. It's important to show them there's another way of thinking about it. Do your best to handle it. So if they have a problem with the way logistically you'll deploy your service, well, then explain to them that you'll be helping them in a certain way and why it works or whatever it might be. But the crucial part is once you feel you've handled it, you need to check. And most people don't do that. They kind of feel like they've handled it, then they move on. And no objection's ever handled until you are convinced that they are convinced that it is, you know, that it's dealt with. Because if I say, does that make sense? Can you see why I do it this way? Hopefully that answers your, you know, allays your fears and worries, whatever. And they say, yeah, I suppose. And if I move on, they're still thinking about the objection. Yeah. So unless the objection is blown out of the water, it's still there and it's probably on their mind. So I need to take that process and always check. If they're like, ah, that makes sense then, totally understand now, I'm with you, now I can move on. Otherwise, that problem will always be there. You can't ignore the objections and hope they'll go away, I'm afraid. But yeah. usually the best way to handle objections is not retrospectively. But we want to make this point, because this is very much contrary to what most sales trainers will teach. They teach how to handle objections,
okay,
which is, when you get this objection, say this thing. When you get that objection, say that thing, and you have the scripts and so on. The worst way to handle objections, aside from ignoring them, is retrospectively like that, because it's happened and like you have to kind of scrabble back, and you can, to a degree, kind of lose your position as this expert who can help. Far better, and it takes a bit of time because you have to have a number of pitches to realize it, far better is to say to yourself, let's do an audit. There are only like 6 objections in the world anyway, like money, timing, whatever. What one do I keep getting? And the best way to handle an objection, I always found, is to preemptively strike against the objection ever coming up in the first place. So, for instance, the reason why, this is a really rubbish example, but the reason why no one later on goes, but I don't know your name, is because at the start I've told them what my name is, right? So it's the same here. So if they constantly have a problem with your premium price point, you need to deliver a little nugget of information in the first 30-second proposition as to why you're premium. And then that doesn't come up so much.
Yeah.
No one buying a Rolls Royce has a problem with the price. because there's the primer of culturally, there have been, I don't think there's like so much marketing for Rolls Royce, but culturally we are educated and brought up to think Rolls Royce is worth lots of money and they are premium products, so you don't go to buy one unless you're going to spend a lot of money. So the objection doesn't come up about money. I bet those people buying the latest smartphone probably don't have the money issue so much as their objection, because they're out to spend £1,300 on a phone. So preemptively striking is the best thing, and all people listening, if they're selling, should be asking themselves, what's the number one objection and what can I insert at the front of the call or meeting or whatever that would actually handle that kind of objection so it never comes up. So for many, the best way to do the price one, for instance, if you're really a premium product, is to say something like, you know, to make the point that you are premium and work with best in class, and like, we, you know, we are different because we are a premium price point, and then people are, if you do it right, then people are absolutely fine with it, and that doesn't come up because that was already conditioned at the beginning. You see, you can tell there's a whole lecture on objection handling under the bonnet, but that's kind of the TLDR.
Well, it's a big topic, and probably the main one that stops people getting to where they want to be is the objections that they have. I'm just so glad that you picked up on the pricing, and you said it should be the last thing that changes, because fundamentally, for me, a bit on my soapbox here, but that's the difference between good all-round marketer, bad all-round marketer. Bad all-round marketer focuses on comms, promotion, discount. Good all-round marketer does the whole marketing mix, which includes place, the actual product, is it good enough, and also price. If you set the price before you are doing anything, there's a reason. You understand the market, you understand the value it offers, you understand the actual product and how much it took to produce and all that kind of stuff. So again, it's not preempting that objections, that's the sales part, but it's starting from a basis where it's, this is why we've got this value. And if people can understand that internally and externally, then price isn't the argument.
Yeah, and I think diving into your own product or service and saying to yourself, what are all of the items of value? Now, which ones do we draw out as of most value to the set of people who are the ideal customer? And it's really fascinating that sometimes you have a lot of different points of value, if you like, or benefits. Mm. And the salesperson hones in on the things they think are coolest or best. But actually, you need to resonate most with the people who are buying. And over time, you get really down with the stuff that people really, really like the most. And then you can augment those more in your marketing and in your selling process, and often not mention other things at all. You know what I mean? So that's the bottom line. Again, I keep using iPhone as an example, even though I haven't got one. iPhone doesn't brag about its chip. Yeah. Really good. It brags about how it's a luxury piece of art. That's his kind of big thing. It's got a great camera or whatever it might be. So it focuses on certain things and not on others. Whereas other types of phone or other smartphone manufacturers would focus on other USPs. It really makes a big difference. So that is a demonstration of thinking about the audience and what's going to lead them to be down with spending that kind of money. It really is important.
And that differentiator as well, like you say, it's if you're going to focus on that tech, that's your target audience, and you own that part of that market. Just full disclosure, I don't know about you, Richard, but I do buy a lot of my goods from men in car parks, so particularly around Christmas time. So anyone that's listening, apologies if you didn't like the one-handed teddy bear that I got you for Christmas, but you know, it was fairly cheap. He did me a deal.
I use that example because it happened to us once. My wife and I were going to buy a secondhand car, okay, for her, just to get another car. So we went down all these different car showrooms, like which ones we look at, and there was this one, and it was like, I'll meet you at this place. Like, it's weird, but like the car was amazing. It was like the latest spec. It had no mileage. It was so awesome. I was like, we'll check it out. And the dude was like, flip-flops and shorts in a car park. And he's like, do you want to get in? And I'm like, no, thanks. And the worst part was like, I can't buy your product, man, because it may look legit, but it doesn't feel it. That's the problem. And so positioning and how it looks and how you dress it all up is really crucial.
Absolutely. So final actionable tip, I just want to touch upon quite briefly, because it was more about getting to the overcoming objections and getting to that sale point. And that's what next. So, you know, you've got that sale. And what do you do now? It's like, happy day, sign the contract, away you go. What should we be doing there?
When we've closed a deal?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
What's interesting is that we're closing a deal for the prospect. Isn't about the moment when they're signing a deal. It's about the relationship and the steps they're going to have afterwards. Mm-hmm. So when I buy a TV, I don't care about the moment when I'm buying the TV. That's just a necessary circumstance of the kind of the transaction. What I'm excited about is getting home and trying all the new tech out. And it's the same for them. The buyer is interested in the journey afterwards.
Okay.
So a good sell, just to answer your question first, I have to start with the good sell represents the seller focusing on what will be happening afterwards. Mm-hmm. Because if you focus, and so next steps, if you're focusing too much on the deal and the moment of the deal, you're projecting at them that all you care about is closing the deal and getting the money. They care more about the things that come in afterwards. So but the moment it comes in, the moment it's signed off and the money's in the bank, job one is a connection with them. I would always send them a message or something, a voice memo in these days you should be leveraging, because it's a great way of saying, hey, you know, payment received with thanks. I'm now doing this. I'm sending over this and this. Like for me, for instance, my accelerator, it would be like, I'm sending you, you know, you're getting the welcome email and the access to the course. What I'm also going to do, I'm going to introduce you now to the group chat. They're going to love you. I can't wait to introduce you. So I'm taught like the deal is an incidental moment. Mm. The problem with salespeople is that they blow this up to be this major thing. That it should be almost just like in the same way as you're breathing in and out, we do the deal part. It's just a very incidental moment. The big focus, the big sing and dance part is afterwards, where you onboard them and it's like the parading out this new client, make them feel great. What you don't want to do is go silent. So next step. So send over the invite instantly for the first catch-up call. Send them an email with, you know, I often do, like, I send them an email with a few questions on their process because I'm really interested in learning that. Get working on this stuff straight away, but like organize that first call with them and get this sense that you're really pumped about stepping forward and working with them. What it does is it makes them feel good that they're in safe hands and you've got process behind looking after them. Because what they're really buying is the feeling that you've got this.
Yeah.
Not that you've had all this interaction, now you've gone silent, because it suggests that you're not so bothered, and that might represent the kind of interaction you'll have further down the line.
Mm.
And the last thing you want to do is leave them in the cold, because that's where buyer's remorse gets amplified, where they're like, oh man, I just spent a lot of money and now they're not getting back to me. Like, it's been 2 days, what am I doing? Like, and that's, you don't want to have that kind of thing at all. So Rolls Royce them is my old
I like that.
Process, you know what I mean?
It's like building a friendship, isn't it? Absolutely.
Quite
it's,
right. You know, and show that you're genuinely interested in what they get, not just what.
Absolutely, yeah. Money's a side point at that junction. So, Richard, are you ready?
Although it isn't, you just don't show it, you know.
Yeah, no, but for the point of view of the relationship, it is just like you said, it is just one other stage, massively important on both sides, but it needs to be just seen as another stage. So, Richard, are you ready for some quick fire questions to finally
wrap up? I always like these ones.
Right, brilliant. What was the last thing you remember Googling?
By voice, I'll cheat here, Peter. By voice, I remember doing a search on Stefan Schwarzman, who runs the Black Rock hedge fund.
Okay.
I can't remember if it was Black Rock or Blackstone. Blackstone kind of happened afterwards through someone who's part of it. Well, so that's a dull answer, but that's the answer.
Brilliant. Love it. Right, let's move on. What's the most important thing to know about sales right now?
Right now is that you don't have to pitch people. You can create a world where they come to you, and with a tiny bit of patience, you suddenly feel very fulfilled in your role, because people are like happy to explore working with you, rather than saying, go on then, I've got 5 minutes, do your pitch. And it's far more fulfilling. So please embrace it if you're not. It really is important.
Absolutely. Why do you love what you do?
I love, it's only one, like, honestly, it's beyond the money. It's beyond everything. What I love is people who are frustrated with what they're doing. So I mostly work with consultants and coaches on getting conversion. And the results, and I love it, because, and I kind of throw LinkedIn coaches under the bus, I know, because they're like, you know, well, we got lots of profile views and look, I'm getting lots of engagement and things, whereas instead I'm like, let's get you deals. And I had someone in December who joined my accelerator, and she had a five figure month, and I remember in the last week saying, how's the month going? She said, I've now had a five figure week. I had someone who at the start of this year did a 30 grand deal from one post.
Brilliant.
Dollars, but still good. someone who did 8 sales in 2 weeks, all from like content and the process of conversion that I teach, from, you know, pivoting out of content to DMs to a call to a deal. It doesn't have to be difficult. They're not spamming DMs all the time, but just like the moment when they're like, oh wow, this is so good. And then the belief, you know, that they Oh, it's so good, because the truth is that usually the people I work with, they've been on the pitch for a while, had skin in the game, they've been in corporate maybe an hour, maybe like 10 years or so, and they're fed up of like putting so much time and work into content and getting nothing. So now it's like, that's it. Like, I'm getting the rewards I want. I just think there's no greater feeling. I can have that all day long. I absolutely love it.
Fantastic. Finally, and most importantly, if people want to find out more about yourself, what you offer, what you can do for them, where should they go?
Yeah, so I do have a website, therichardmoore.com. However, I prefer connecting properly with people. So, you know, you can email me, richard@therichardmoore.com, but let's get on LinkedIn. So if you go to linkedin.com/in/RichardJamesMoore, I'd love to meet people. It'd be really awesome. And because I'm a little bit fussy, because you want to connect with people who aren't just building connections for the sake of it. If someone did want to connect, say, you know, I listened to the podcast, that kind of makes sense, then we can take it from there. But I would love to connect with people. And if they want to discuss further conversion and sales and so on, I'm more than happy to. It's like my Netflix, Peter.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Anyone that's listening, check out Richard on LinkedIn, check out his live Q&A, get involved in it, connect with him. He'll discuss this stuff all day. And finally, Richard, thank you so much for joining me today. Absolute pleasure.
I absolutely enjoyed myself. Thank you so much. And I hope you'll do it again in the future.
Too right, we will. Firstly, thank you, Richard, so much for taking the time out to talk us through a decent sales process so we know and understand from the marketing perspective what needs to be done and how we can contribute to that overall business proposition or just to make a successful sales and marketing team. So here are some of my takeaways from this two-parter. Firstly, my top tip. Richard discussed thinking about the objectives and outcomes and making them realistic to your position. For example, if it's your first day in a sales role and you're inexperienced, then the objective is to make those sales calls rather than be closing them all the time. This just means you're one step further to the next level and a successful sales process, one step at a time. It's exactly the same in marketing. You're not going to revolutionize the world or even a company on day one. Take it slow, learn and understand the craft, and improve every single day. My favorite quote from these two episodes is that if your rejection rate is high due to the price point, then it's best to pre-qualify that the pricing you offer isn't an issue before you move forward with a potential client. Richard puts it like this. You need to deliver a little nugget of information in the first 30 seconds of the conversation as to why you're premium. And then that doesn't come up so much, if at all. Pre-qualification through your customer journey is imperative as to not waste your time or your potential client's time. And finally, the most important takeaway from these episodes, take note, content forms gravity. Powerful words indeed. You need to build your bank of content that is helpful to the people you are looking to serve. The more you push out into the world this type of content, the more your ideal clients will start to notice you and gravitate towards you. Love a good pun. Thank you so much for joining us today on Marketing Study Lab. It really means the world that you're listening to this out there. And hopefully I've provided you some value. If you're looking to know more about what Marketing Study Lab does and is about, go to marketingstudylab.co.uk or get in touch with me personally, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or feel free to email me at peter@marketingstudylab.co.uk. Happy marketing.